I had a friend who was at Yale back in the days when it was not co-ed. And in the habit, now and again, for a special occasion after football games and so on, of the fraternities was to invite one of the, what do they call them, one of the Ivy League sister colleges over so that the men would have dates. And Bob was in a fraternity which rented a room, banquet room, down at Maury's for an evening celebration, and it was rather formal. And he caught the eye of his fraternity brother, who was trying to signal something to him, and he finally decided that what he was being told was that his fly was open. Well, this was a formal occasion. He had a date with a young woman whom he hadn't met before this. It was just arranged. So as tactfully as he could, he zipped up his fly, proceeded then through the evening, got up to leave, backed away and pulled all of the entire top of the table onto the floor. He zipped the tablecloth into his fly. Memorable first date.
Is that true?
It is true. That is true.
Well, I had a friend that went out on a first date with this girl. This girl was the girl as far as he was concerned. He really wanted to impress her.
Was it you?
No, it wasn't me. If it was, I wouldn't tell you anyway. But anyway, this guy was going to take her to this banquet. So he borrowed a car, drove into town, you know, to go to the banquet. Drove all over the place looking for the St. Paul Hilton. Couldn't find it. Drove all over downtown looking around trying to find the St. Paul Hilton. Couldn't find it at all. Finally stopped and he asked the policeman, he said, "Excuse me, where's the St. Paul Hilton?" And the cop looks at him and says, "Why don't you try St. Paul? He's driving around Minneapolis." Then to make it worse, he got there late, so he couldn't find a parking spot nearby. He parked quite a ways away from the hotel. He came out and he couldn't remember which car he'd borrowed. He was wandering around trying all the locks in his cars. That was his last date too.
Yeah. Funny things. Anyone else happened to anyone else?
Surely.
I was running for some office when I was in college. Part of that was a campaign, a radio campaign. I was making a campaign. And there was an interviewer. And we went through a rather long interview, maybe 15, 20 minutes. And he said, it was at the close of the hour, he said, "Is there anything else you'd like to say before we close?" And I said, there's one very important thing I'd like to stress. And it evaporated. I couldn't remember what I was going to say.
Oh, did it come back to you?
No, he saved me somehow, but I can't remember.
Young student at college, and he was a good friend of the fellow who was student body president. So in the little chapel service, he got up and he was saying how much he appreciated being here. He happened to be from Korea, spoke pretty good English. And he went on about a few other things, and then he wanted us to talk about Gary and say how good he was. And he said, and I sure appreciate Gary. He's a swell head.
You know, we all have our language problems. This isn't so much the funniest thing, but it is one of the most embarrassing things that happened to me. I was in Austria, and I was to write a paper, a thesis, for on the Austrian resistance movement against Hitler. And part of that was to be original research, so I interviewed people who were participants in that. Well, it turned out that several of them were high government officials, and one of them was a fellow named Bruno Kreisky, who has been the chancellor of Austria now for some years. I was given an interpreter, but I had worked hard on my German, and I wanted at least to be able to express courtesies in German and get as far as I could in the interview. And meeting with a high government official, I worked very hard to say things properly and say them well. So I had memorized formal German. So I had gone over and over again in my head. Es freut mich sehr, Sie kennenzulernen. I'm very happy to make your acquaintance. So I was introduced to him and brought in, and there was this gathering around there. And I said, Es freut mich sehr. No, I said what I meant to say, but I said, Es tut mir leid, Sie kennenzulernen, which means, I am very sorry to make your acquaintance. So much for a big day in the state house.
People must lead boring lives.
If you can't think of the funniest thing, you know, try the second funniest.
I have twin granddaughters that were 6 years old this year in May, and they looked at me and they share my birthday with me and said, Grandma, we're six and you're 60. When we're seven, would you be 70?
There are lots of funny things with the kids. Our son was, I suppose, about three, I'm not sure. He hadn't been talking for a long time. His vocabulary was quite limited. We were in one room and the television was on in the living room, and he was sitting there watching it, and the stock report were being given, evening news. And he came running into the dining room where we were sitting, and he said, Dad, they sold 11 million chairs in New York. That's a lot of chairs.
I took care of a little kid in the hospital that was probably about three, and he was doing fine at the time. And he asked me what my name was, so I told him, and I said, what's your name? And he was silent, but he pointed to this little ID bracelet. He says, I can't read.
Oh, no.
sounds like our 4-year-old daughter who likes our new hamster, and so I was kind of helping her make conversation with a friend, and I said, well, why did we call a hamster Cinnamon, Gretchen? And she got to me and she said, because he didn't have a name.
Well, Linda and I worked at a camp this summer, and this past summer. One week we had third graders in camp, and this one third grader came up to Jeff, one of the counselors, and he asked him what genitals were. And Jeff, you know, he kind of explained it to the kid, and he says, no, that's not what it is. So he says, yes, it is. And he explained it again. And then the kid said, no, in the Bible it talks about the Jews and the Gentiles.
I don't know if this is funny to other people, but I'll try it. I lived in the country and I went to a little country school, a little two-room schoolhouse. And a van was our bus. And it just made a couple runs to a couple of different circle drives. And so the van was pulling up to our driveway, and it was my first day of first grade, and I hadn't gone to kindergarten. And I saw the bus and I tore down back down the road towards the house. And it had been raining, so there was water in the ditch along our driveway. And I jumped across the ditch and I hung on to a tree with my legs and my arms, and I did not want to go to school, obviously. And my mother came, she had walked down the road because our driveway is a quarter of a mile long and we live in a real wooded area. So Mom comes up behind me, grabs me around the waist and pulls. Well, she lands in the ditch. And of course I was on top of her and half wet, and she put me on that van and I was kicking and screaming, but I made it to school and I loved school after that. Oh, yeah.
I don't know how many of you people have seen the hydroplane races. Wherever they are, you know, okay, the boats, normally what the people see very much of is you see the boats going around on the water and everything, and of course they've got these rooster tails behind, coming up behind them. And our little 4-year-old, he's 30 now, but when he was 4 years old, we about that time we moved down to an area which is right above the hydroplane pits on Lake Washington. And so there was close enough to go and be in, you know, contact with the boats quite a bit, you know, and you'd actually take time to go down and see them ahead of time and everything. And so we took this one little son down with us and went around looking at all the boats, and of course they had just, this was before the race, and they had come in on the big trucks and everything else like that. And this little kid was walking around all the way around. He kept walking around, he didn't say a word. But long as he came up to this one guy and he pulled on his jacket or something there, I remember seeing him wondering what Herbie was going to say to this other man, and he says, Mister, where's the rooster tail?
Well, we had a choir concert that our youngest daughter was in at junior college, and I thought, well, since George works evenings, I better tape this so he can hear it. So I took the tape recorder, and the conductor raised his hand like this, and I pushed the button, and out came band music for the whole crowd.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
That's a good one.
Oh, no.
timing was exquisite.
We had a funny situation. One of our pastors was singing one of the liturgies, and he started out on an octave too high. And it was on one, obviously, I had to go up another half octave. And the whole congregation just roared. You know, there was just that kind of rumble. Like, everyone was sitting on it.
Norm Tice was here earlier in the summer and was telling about, again, it wasn't the funniest thing, but there was the most embarrassing. Two things happened to him. He's a pastor, and he was conducting a funeral service, and he got the name of the deceased wrong. It happened to be someone in the congregation who was still alive. That was only topped by the time that he was conducting a wedding ceremony and had the right name for the bride, but had made an association with her and used her former boyfriend.
I have a clergy friend who dropped a ring down the front of the bride's throat.
I have a friend that rent his wife-to-be's contact lenses on their wedding morning. She put them in a glass on the shelf with a little bit of water in them, and he was all nervous and got himself a glass of water.
Rudy has a price.
Well, yeah, Rudy, tell us your story.
Oh, I'm sorry, I wasn't coming to hear your story. Well, I used to ride the, I rode the bus regularly. I live in Arlington, Virginia. I used to ride the bus regularly to work at the Department of Agriculture in Washington. And it took me about 25 minutes. And I had a friend who also worked at the Forest Service. And his wife would sometimes take him to the bus stop where I got home. And then he would take the bus down so she wouldn't have to go downtown. So that would happen once on and once I got a ride with him. He came by and he called over and said, I got in the car. Well, his wife took me down that day, I guess. But this day I had my little satchel, my lunches in there, my Newsweek and papers and those new drawings and stuff. And I always carried that with me. And I walked down the way, as I came up to the bus stop, I saw him drive up, him and his wife. He was driving, she was sitting on the right-hand side of the seat. And the bus came up right behind them. Well, she drove right to the corner just to prevent the bus from going ahead, so that her husband could be prepared to get into the bus. I didn't know that. So I thought, gee, I'm gonna get a ride. So I get over there, and instead of I saw the empty, that all of us there was an empty seat there. I got in the car, and she was behind the wheel. And he jumped out of the traffic, and ran around the front, and ran in the bus. And there's that little dog in the back, and he was yapping at a strange man in the car. And to hear what these people in the bus all saw, the whole thing in the back same time. He ran around. I got out and tipped my hat and thanked you for the ride so far. I got in the bus and I couldn't control myself. Everybody was
There was a practical joker in Chicago at one of the laboratories I worked in, and he did a lot of practical jokes. He was in the middle of a Chicago street, and he waved down a streetcar. It was so funny. I didn't see this, but I heard about it. And the streetcar came screeching to a halt, obviously a very sudden stop, right next to him. He put his foot up on the step, tied his shoe.
We moved to Seattle from small town Alaska about 3 years ago, I guess, and our youngest one was real interested to see the Space Needle and the Kingdom and whatever else we pointed out. And our older daughter was real interested to learn the Lord's Prayer. I guess they were learning it at Sunday school. And so as she was praying, we heard the smaller one chime in, "Thy kingdom come."
I heard of a pastor once who had one of those wireless microphones. He was all suited up, ready to go in the sanctuary, and decided he had to do something before he did that, went to the bathroom, and had already turned it on.
I have one my dad told me, and I'm told this is true, so I'll tell it to you. It's about another doctor that he knows, and supposedly there was this minor surgery office that the doctor had, and he had an assistant who was quite new and who was learning about all these different procedures, and she was eager to, you know, check out each thing that was going on. So anyway, they had all prepped in one room this person who was waiting to have a mole removed, and in another room there was a man who was going to have a vasectomy. Well, the assistant was wandering around, and she was supposed to go help out with the mole to be removed. So she went in before the doctor was there and started chatting with the guy, and she just was eager to learn. So she said to him, "Well, can I just..." She leaned over and said, "Can I have a look before the doctor removes that?" Why the man just blasted.
And?
On tape? They're getting better.
Yeah. I don't know if this is on tape or not.
You didn't tell
them. No, we didn't.
There are always sort of family jokes that stay with family, little things. This is outstanding and funny, but it's one of our family little stories. My little nephews were visiting us. We have just little boys. And we were just bought our house. Carol had a lot of work to do, but the kids were playing out there in the backyard so hard, they were coming ready for lunch. So she just opened up a can of Campbell's soup and crackers, and these boys all sitting around there, and he looks up at Aunt Carol and just says, "Aunt Carol, you're sure a good cook."
There is a record of famous bloopers, and I don't remember many of them, but they're all true stories, and they're actually just taken off of tapes. One of them I do remember was when I think it was at the inauguration. The president was announced, and the person said, "And now the President of the United States." Hubert Heaver. Yeah, but this one actually happened, yeah. the original spoonerism is, I don't remember the original one, but the word comes from an English professor and a clergyman by the name Archibald Spooner. And he was speaking at the university and was to introduce royalty, and instead of saying, "I present our dear old queen," he said, "I present our queer old dean."
I needed to call the doctor one time for this little baby that was having problems. This was like 4 a.m. and the doctor had been up most of the night, just gotten to bed, slept maybe an hour. So I told him what the problem was, and I didn't hear any answer. I thought, whoops, he's gone back to sleep. So I said, "Well, what would you like?" He said, "I'll have one vanilla and one chocolate."
Well, any of you that's been to Minneapolis knows there isn't much happening there. So we have this favorite place to take visitors to when we're in this one bathroom, and it's got a one-way mirror. So you can stand in there and you look out and see people walking by, walking in the hallways and everything.
It's like a mall, sort of like a mall.
Well, anyway, a friend of mine and I were down there. You were there, yeah. Mm-hmm. And she was in the other bathroom. So we went inside, we looked around, laughed at everybody walking by and everything. And then we went outside and tried to figure out how they did it, whether it was a one-way mirror, two pieces of glass with a light in between and all that, and we're looking at it and pointing at the seams, and all of a sudden this guy comes up and says, "Haven't you ever seen a black man before?" Needless to say, we knew where he'd been.
I thought you were going to reverse them.
No.
Where are these bathrooms?
In Butler Square.
Family jokes, we love to bring this up. You kind of have to know my dad to appreciate it. He's kind of the distinguished type, you know, and he's always calm and in control. And anyway, we were out visiting my grandparents in Southern California, and we went to the ocean to go swimming. And we weren't, any of us, really too used to the big waves. So anyway, we all heard about this later from my dad.
this big wave came and knocked him down, and he lost his swimming trunks. So he grabbed this piece of seaweed and wrapped around his and there happened to be a man he didn't know, someone kind of close to him, and goes, oh, there they go. So this man swims after the swimming trunks, gets him and brings him back to him, and he pulls him on, and when he gets out of the water, he's got him on the inside. So he goes up to change and everything, and anyway, his only comment about it was he turned to my mother and he said, where were you when I needed you, dear?
It was a habit in my family, on my dad's side, to have a family, extended family, rent our cottage together for a week in the summertime, and that was everybody's vacation. And it was often the time of some practical jokes within the family. I don't remember a lot of them because I suppose I was only 5, 6, 7 years old when we had the last one. But I do remember the men who were always getting up to go fishing and catch walleyes at dawn. Getting up, and we boys always wanted to go along, so we went out in the boat. It was dark when we left the dock, and we sat out in the boat, waiting for the sun to rise, and fishing there as best we could in the dark. And we waited, and the sun just didn't come up. And we waited, and we waited, and all the women had changed the alarms. And in fact, we had gotten up at 1 a.m. Even though the alarm clock said 5 o'clock. The sun never The other practical joke I remember from that was when my mom and dad opened up their suitcase and their pajamas literally jumped out of the suitcase because my aunt and uncle had tied frogs into the legs.
I had an uncle who had gotten when he was in high school or so, when he was younger, he had gotten a new pair of pajamas for Christmas that his sister thought would be funny to just take them as they're folded up in the package, and they ran a sewing machine all over them. Or they probably even took them out, but it was all sewed all over the place. So he couldn't get into them. Well, he returns them to the store saying that he can't get into them, and then gave him a bigger size.
We picked starfish once. We went from Minnesota and visiting relatives in California. On the coast, we went out one day and picked starfish all day long, and some sand dollars, and we filled up a box in the trunk of our car. It was a hot summer day, and shut the trunk and went home, and oh, we were showing everyone all these starfish that we had found, and we slammed the trunk and left them there, and the next day we went back out, opened up the trunk, and the whole neighborhood just smelled because they had all rotted, and they were just, I mean, they died, and it was so hot that they just took on the smell right away.
My father is also a very distinguished, serious fellow and businessman and real sober kind of man. And we were on a family vacation at Lake Chelan, actually, many years ago, and clowning up a little bit at breakfast, having a good time. And my sister has always been rather bold and stuck a Chiquita banana sticker on my father's forehead. And we all laughed it up and thought that was quite funny and continued on with breakfast. And a few minutes later, there was a knock at the door, and my father answered it. Oh, no. Mr. Bennett, you have a telephone call. Well, thank you very much. Yes, I'll be right down. You know, and he turned around and looked at us, and he still had it. particularly pleasing to see him in that sort of a situation, because it just never happened.
I drive, pick up food for a food bank, and one time I ended up with 8 slabs of frozen spinach. Each slab weighed about 18 pounds. We said, boy, what are we going to do with the spinach? We don't have any families that can use 18 pounds of spinach. So I said, well, Elmer, we have the radio alarm saw in the shop. That's an idea. So we took the spinach into the shop and used the radio alarm saw. But we didn't do too good a job of cleaning up the saw. Well, that was on a Thursday. And Tuesday morning, I usually go in and work with the facilities engineer, and my brother-in-law was in there. I walked in, and well, by Tuesday morning, the spinach had gotten pretty ripe. Brother-in-law said, you sure did a lousy job of cleaning up that saw. Well, there's a tube to carry the sawdust into the can there. We didn't empty the can, we didn't clean the tube. We cleaned what we could out of the saw, and the two of them got that out. But that day we found jobs every other place in the church but in the shop. And we had the exhaust fan on, and the facilities engineer said, I've had 2 cans of deodorant. And a few weeks later I came in with 4 big frozen pork loins, so about 1.5 feet long. And the facilities engineer says, I have a brand new handsaw here.
Well, Linda had a funny thing happen to her once.
Well, I did.
Yes, she did. It was the day we got married. What happened was,
here it is.
I told her I was going to welcome everyone to the wedding and have a groom's welcome, and we had it printed up on the program, groom's welcome by Dave. So anyway, it ended up she was waiting down at the end of the aisle, waiting to come up with her father and all that. I get up to give my welcome, and I end up giving about a 5-minute monologue, telling jokes and
about women.
But it all was very tasteful.
But the other one, she still came up down.
Yeah, she did.
It was really funny though, because everyone in the congregation was just turning around, looking at me at the end of all these jokes to see what my reaction was. Just standing back there. My poor dad couldn't hear. He's hard of hearing. And he's asking me, what? And I'm laughing, and I'm trying to repeat these dumb jokes that he's telling in front of the church, and Dad's wondering what's going on.
But it was really good because it loosened everyone up. they had a good time.
We did in the wintertime was put up ice for the summer. Mm-hmm. Maybe some of you had some experience like that. I don't know, but now we have a refrigerator. But back in Kansas, we would have some ponds, and we'd cut the ice blocks. You've heard the stories. But we would pack them in straw. Some in the woods country, they put sawdust in it. But we used wheat straw because that was handy and available. But they'd dig a kind of a square opening in the ground and put just a simple roof over it. And they would have like a rafter here and then a stringer across the rafter to hold the roof together and just sit on that hole. But then they'd pack the ice just in a big mass, and logs would come in. They'd take a wagon. There's always a lot of excitement because you take a wagon, cut the blocks, and you float in the pond, and then you pull it up, saddle horse, pull it up into the wagon, and then haul it down to the ice house. And there would be somebody down there, but we shaved off, so it all fit together like one big block of ice. And he had these ice tongs, this one canister. And he'd always keep them razor sharp. He had a file handy so it'd be sharp. And you know what an ice tong is like? You know, something like that. Well, he'd just sling them over that stringer in the rafter there. And I was helping load the ice down there, and I came back and visited him and talked with him. And I stood on the block, let's see how I was thinking. I was on a block like that, and he was working back here. And I was going to go back out, and I backed right into the ice.
Oh, no.
And I hung there.
Oh.
Like this.
Oh, no.
And he lifted me up, and we just laughed. It was so funny. We didn't have anything to clean it. We didn't have some kerosene. I remember we cleaned it with kerosene. Of course, it wasn't in the corner. He was in the fleshy part of the rear end.
I might tell you some excitement my kids give me. Me and my mother, we lived on a farm, and I was visiting my mother, and of course I had children the age of some of my sisters and brothers, and so we had mulberry trees and a chicken house there close. And so they were, thought they would cook a meal, I guess. And they, Mom had been missing her hen eggs, and she wanted to put these things on. She hadn't been gathering anything. So they stuffed oil cans with grass or straw and stuff, and they lit up a fire, and they put eggs on top, and it blew up. And eggs all over the mulberry tree.
People have recollections of campus shenanigans.
Yeah, get me in trouble one time.
The most embarrassing time. We had, down at POU, we had a house mother that we liked to tease once in a while. So there was one girl and I, and this other girl now is a very sedate person, you know, now she's become that, you know, if I mention her name, you just die. But anyway, we went up and we were going to get even with this house mother for doing something, for campusing us for some, I don't remember what it was, but anyway. So we put honey on her doorknob, but we were standing there putting the honey on when she walked up. So the campusing lasted a little longer, you should know.
I went to college in one of the years, I don't remember which ones, when flashers or streakers were in. And I had a girlfriend who was just coming out of the library as one was going to run straight through, but he knocked her over. Nothing on him. Knocked her over, stopped to help her up, and said, "Excuse me."
No. I had a friend. Sort of a friend. Not really a friend. Anyway, he wanted to go out. This was back when streaking was the big thing, and he wanted to go out and try it. So he did. He went running down the hall and outside, and he came running back in. And his door was locked. No pocket for the key. We had to get the RA to let him in.
Oh, no.
We got one more or two more.
Speaking of weddings, reminds me of
when our neighbor girl got married, she been a spinster for quite a few years. And so we, of course, we had a chivalry, you know. And I had some itching powder. I got one of the girls to find his pajamas. Put a little itching powder in. The bride was telling about it the next day. She couldn't understand why he got up and took 3 showers.
Well, I hesitate to say let's go to bed on that one.